Well, well.
Zen, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
What I will say is that you're going to see me on Saturday.
Yes.
I'm going to the Inner Reset. I signed up. And I'm super excited. I'm so glad that I caught your story when you were like, there's a couple of tickets left. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm in a phase in my life where I'm really being really intentional mm-hmm. with, I guess, discovering my triggers, discovering the little things that I feel like are holding me back from the next phase in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't figure certain things out. So I'm going to be there. Tell me a little bit about, what the Inner Reset, how it started, how it came about, like, and what it is. What can I expect?
So you can expect the unexpected within yourself.
Okay.
Within whatever happens within yourself. But Inner Reset just kind of happened. I'll say it wasn't something that I planned. A girlfriend of mine had opened a studio and she was like, hey, do you want to just do a community event here because I need a promotion? And I was like, sure. I planned nothing. I was just like, I'm just going to do a meditation. I'll have people come and whoever comes, comes. Whoever doesn't, doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it started as a sound bath and guided meditation. But what I found was as soon as the people got there, I knew what to do. Before they came, mm-hmm. I was like, you didn't plan anything. All you did was grab your sound bowls and say, I'm just going to come.
Yeah.
So what it has transformed into is I feel a type of way about saying safe space. And I don't know why. I think because I hear it so much. But yeah. that truly is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
What it's transformed into is a safe space for people to release.
Mm.
What I found is within our community, community of color, community yeah. of women, we need somewhere where we can cry amongst each other. It's necessary for us to have sacred community. It's just one of our basic human needs.
Mm-hmm.
So we need somewhere where we can cry. We need somewhere where we can scream. And then we need a place where we feel soothed
mm-hmm.
in the midst of all of it. And truthfully, I'm a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted a space where I could teach a little bit mm-hmm. about consciousness and mindfulness, but then also curate a container where whatever anyone needed, divine power, consciousness source, whatever anyone believes in,
mm-hmm.
With whatever they needed, we could call in that power to come in and deliver it to them.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
So that's what it is. I will be playing instruments in some
nice.
Parts of it. So it is sound healing,
mm.
but
it's expect unexpected.
It is because I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I feel that this one is going to be a lot of release, but I don't know exactly how that's going to. I don't know how it's going to happen.
How it's going to play
out. Mm-hmm.
I got some instructions in the email that said you were requiring everyone to come with a set intention.
Yes.
And what do you mean by that? Just for clarity, just. What does that mean to you?
I love that you asked that because I see that question so often. People ask, how do I set an intention?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really just, what do you want? What do you want?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people walk into spaces often. They're like, well, whatever happens, I'm okay with that. But when it comes to, and it's okay to have that attitude sometimes, but
yeah.
when it comes to truly receiving what you need from the higher power
mm-hmm.
or from your guides, from your angels, whenever you ask for exactly what you want, then you'll get what you ask
mm.
for. If you don't ask for anything, you'll just.
You could get a few
You'll get whatever. But coming with an intention is knowing exactly what it is that you need. And for me, sometimes the intention is, give me what I need. if that's, you know, sometimes that's the intention.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know what to ask for sometimes. So my
Got
intention
it.
Is that I receive exactly what it is that I need.
Wow. I love that because my next question was like, when there's so many areas in your life, like for me, I feel like there's a few different pockets of areas
mm-hmm.
Where I want help or want a breakthrough. And how do I narrow it down, or how do I, you know, which one do I start with, or which one is more important? And you're saying basically, like, maybe my intention is give me clarity.
Yes. Shift my perspective. Show me what I need to see in order to receive my breakthrough. Tell me what I need to know. Open my eyes. Like, so those, you don't have to, because if you're looking for a breakthrough, you don't know exactly what it's going to take. You don't know the one thing. And a lot of times it's not just one thing that you need to receive. Mm-hmm. So what I ask for most often is for my eyes to be open and for my ears to be sharpened, mm-hmm. so that I can understand exactly what it is that I need to be doing or seeing or being.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. And is that something that you do? Like, do you set an intention every day?
I need to set an intention every day. So there was a time period where I would wake up every morning and I would write down, what am I calling forth today? Mm-hmm. And it works, whatever it was. And honestly, sometimes it was physical things. Mm-hmm. It was, today I need to sell 5 retreats. Mm-hmm. I'm calling forth 5 retreats worth of sales. Mm-hmm. And it happened every single time I called it forth. It would happen. Wow. Or I would, the breadcrumbs will lay themselves out in order for it to happen. But even if I didn't see it that day, then I saw the wheels starting to turn. So there was a space in my journey where I was doing that every single day.
Wow. And now it's just like you're more just in that autopilot of it. Does it feel like, or sometimes you get relaxed in it?
I won't say autopilot, but honestly, there are so many different methods that a person can use.
Okay.
With healing, I guess we can say that sometimes I'm like, girl, I'm tired. I'm like, I'm just gonna wake up today. I'm just gonna wake up and we just gonna do the day today.
Yeah.
It's honestly,
and having that grace with yourself.
Yeah. Like, sometimes that is necessary to not have to have that thing that, okay, today I'm gonna focus on my healing today. Some days it's like, you know what, laying on this couch and reading a book or watching anime is my healing today, and that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But
I love that.
Sometimes it's, I need to journal every single day for 30 days. Like, you know, it's, we have our, it ebbs and flows.
Yeah. And that's good to know, because I think I was intimidated by meditation for so long. I tried it a couple of times, like over the last, you know, decade or so. And it was just so intimidating, because it's like, you don't know when it's working until you know.
Yeah.
Like, you're just there. You're like, okay, I'm supposed to be quiet. Okay, I got 10,000 thoughts. Okay, am I not supposed to think? Mm-hmm. Am I supposed to focus on a thought and think? Like, what does meditation look like for you? Because right now for me, it's like, if I can just get 3 minutes where I just, maybe if it's deep breathing, I'll accept that for the day.
And that's beautiful. That's all you need. If that's where you are, then that's all you need. When I first started meditating years ago, I could not sit still mm-hmm. for 2 minutes. I would set a 5-minute timer. And at 3 minutes, I was looking at the timer like, is my 5 minutes up yet? And same thing, it was the thoughts just running through the mind. So when I do, and I recognize that is most people's issue, especially if you're someone who's high functioning. I have never not been someone who's doing 10 things at once.
Okay.
I
multitasker.
We can call it a multitasker. Mm-hmm. But for me to be satisfied in life, I need to have my hands in so many different things.
Yeah.
Hence why I'm also a pole dancer. Hence why, you know, just that satisfies me. So when it came to meditating, my mind is so busy. Mm. And I know most people who are trying to meditate, their minds are really busy.
Yeah.
So what worked for me, and what we'll do in Inner Reset, and what I do in any guided meditation that I do, we're not trying to be quiet. It's the more you try to be, what you resist persists. Mm. So when you resist the noise in your mind, then it gets louder and louder and louder. So I like to cue people to just listen to what's happening in your mind. You don't necessarily need it to be quiet. You need to be aware of it. Mm. So if you can just sit and listen to the voices that are going on in your head, you can actually hear what you're thinking. Mm. And you can solve so many more of your issues by hearing what's going on behind your busyness.
So you don't really have to solve anything in that moment. Mm-mm. You're just observing. You're listening.
Yes. That's life in general. That's the purpose of meditation. And I know a lot of people talk about it as quiet, quiet. You'll get quiet eventually.
Yeah,
You know, the more you hear what's going on here and you decide what you want to interact with, because that's really what it is. And that's life. Like, it's life is noisy.
Yeah.
Stuff is just happening. And so you're deciding what to interact with and what not. Same in your mind.
Yeah.
It just be saying stuff up there.
Yeah.
And when you start to decide, you know what? I don't want to interact with that thought.
You like, really can make that choice.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. Like, what I've been learning, I guess, is that every thought that goes through my mind is not even my thought.
Not even, no.
So I don't have to validate it. I don't have to even entertain it.
Mm-mm.
That's crazy to me.
There are so many voices that are in our minds. Two of the loudest voices that are in our mind are our parents' voice. So a lot of the stuff that's happening in people's heads, it's not even their own thoughts. It's their parents' voices replaying things that they've told them over and over again.
Wow.
Or things they've heard from childhood figures. Most of it is childhood. Things they've heard from school, teachers, whoever they've respected that have told them things about themselves, those are the thoughts that they're thinking. Those things are playing in their mind.
Got it. Yeah, that makes total sense. And I can digest that. But there's so many people that I come in contact with that just aren't ready. They don't see it. Like I said, I was talking about a family member and I was like, yeah, I think that, you know, this guy, you know, he chooses these kind of women because when he was a child, he, you know, such and such happened. And then my aunt is like, what that got to do with it?
Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Like,
it has everything to do with it.
How do you wait for people to come to you when they're ready for the healing? Or what's the process when someone is resistant of, you know, the way you teach or your mentality?
So I used to try and just give it to people.
Okay.
And something that I've noticed is that when people are on a certain phase of their journey, I don't want to say like beginning or middle, I'm not sure where it is, but when people are on a certain phase of their journey, you've learned this new thing and it's like, hey, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Maybe this could help you too.
Yeah.
You know? And so it was like that for a while until I realized that you can't give someone something they're not hungry for. It's like I'm trying to force feed you a plate of food and you're not hungry.
Yeah.
So I can't make you eat it. Mm-hmm. And so imagine what I look like trying to make you eat when you're not hungry. It's like now I look like a tyrant.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking like I'm like applying force where you're like, okay, hold on, maybe not right now. And so honestly, now it's none of my business.
And you're okay with it? Like, even like, because I know sometimes with me and my family, I'm like, dang, I want them to see what I'm seeing. It could help them so much. And I literally have had to just like pray. Like, one thing I read in a book is just like, you don't have the right to keep someone from experiencing their highs and their lows.
Absolutely.
Like, it's not my job. It's not my place. Like, we have our own guides, inner guides.
Yeah. Often we're not called to help them in that way. I help when I feel called to help. And it's like, it has to be very much so like an in my gut internal calling, like, oh, you should insert yourself here. Otherwise, it's none of my business. Even with my mother, even with my child, I had to release my daughter.
Oh,
she's about to be 12.
Wow.
And one day I woke up and realized you cannot have your hands in her journey.
Hmm.
Or there are certain things as a mother that you are, that you need to do for her.
Yeah.
But in regards to the trials that she'll face, in regards to the lessons that she needs to learn, you have no idea.
Hmm.
And so there are certain parts of her journey that you need to just, you need to release it.
What does that look like? And like, how did you release that? Because I feel like mothers are got a tight grip on their children.
We do.
I mean, not to say that it's a good thing.
I mean, and it said, it's it's protection. It's a protective instinct, yeah. I'll say.
Yeah.
But honestly, it happened so young for her. When she was, I'll say when she was about 4, it was the way that she would look at me and ask me certain questions.
Wow.
She would be like, "Mommy, why did you do that?" And I'm like, "Oh, my bad." But I've never baby talked her. I've always just talked to her just eye to eye. And so as she got older, she just communicates with me very well. Mm. So I found that the way that I was raised wasn't going to work for her. Mm-hmm. She wasn't me.
Yeah.
I'm not my mother. And she's so much more soft and gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wish that I could have been soft and gentle like that as a child, and it had been okay.
Yeah.
And so I saw those things in her, and I was just like, she's going to be okay. Like, if you can mm-hmm. just concern yourself with creating a container where she feels safe, where she likes peace, she mm-hmm. likes calm. She jumps if I raise my voice, so I don't do it.
Wow.
Just, you know, little things like that. Like, don't worry about trying to keep her from doing this or that. Just concern yourself with creating a safe space for her. And
yeah.
then you don't have to micromanage her journey. You don't have to be over her shoulder and looking and seeing what she's doing.
Yeah.
So it was like that. It was like, again, and also realizing that she's a human being and she's her own person.
Absolutely.
So with that, I was like, let her be a human. Let her experience the things. Of course, I'll be there. You need a safety net. Okay.
Yeah.
But otherwise, no, you needed to jump. So let her jump sometimes.
Yeah, that's powerful. Because I needed to jump a couple mm-hmm. times.
A lot. I needed to jump a lot of it. Yeah.
And I was held back. And then I think, yeah, that's so important that you're seeing that so young with her and so early with mm-hmm. her, so that she's not 25, 30, trying to figure out who she is because mommy.
Yes.
said you got to be like this and this, and that was against
yes.
her authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. You mentioned earlier, you were saying Source, Most High,
mm-hmm.
you named a couple of things, and I thought that rings true to me, because now when I pray, I've started using God again. I started saying dear or God, I'll say Infinite Spirit,
yeah.
Most High. How do you feel about that? And what do you believe in? Do you feel like it's all the same? Or do you have a preference of the words you use when you call for support?
You know, I observe myself using multiple names. Okay. And I ask myself, why do you use multiple names?
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize that I use multiple names because other people are uncomfortable with the word God. God mm. does something to people to just say that just because of
that religion.
Yeah. Because of
religion.
And so I found myself calling it many things when it's just everything. I believe that God
yeah.
is just everything. And so truly it's nameless. It doesn't
yeah.
even need
right.
a name.
So it's like not focusing on the name, but just the intention when you're asking.
Yes. I was rereading Conversations with God the other day and saw something that really was like, girl, you missed this the first time. And in the book, the author said that people focus so much on the words
mm-hmm.
that we miss the feeling behind the thing. And the feeling is where you'll find God.
Mm-hmm.
But we focus so much on what the book says, what words we use, what we decide to say, versus just focusing on, what do I feel
mm-hmm.
when I'm in prayer? What do I feel when I'm in meditation? What do I feel
yeah.
when I'm connected?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that is, whatever you want to call it, that's where it
yeah.
is.
So you don't pay attention to, you don't have to use one or the other. You just get in your intentions and you do what you got to do.
Yes. And in prayer, I call forth everybody in prayer, because I'm like, I don't know which one of y'all are gonna answer me today. So like gods, ancestors, angels, guides,
yeah.
gatekeepers, protectors. I'm like, everybody, who's here? Whoever's
right.
here that
yeah.
can come assist with this prayer. I don't care who does it. One
I
of y'all
that.
Come and pull up.
That's super powerful. So your work, it says in your bio on Instagram, I think it's spiritual coach and healer.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? What is that for you? Like, what is your, do you have clients and your tribe or?
I do. So I have one-on-one clients, and The work has been evolving.
Okay.
Because when I started the work, I had no idea what I was going to, I had no idea what I was going to be doing. But, or I had no idea what the structure of the work would be because it's so spirit led. Again, even with like within Reset, I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen.
And that's beautiful.
It is. But now there is more structure. So with my one-on-one clients, I found that there's been a recurring theme, and what people have needed help with is healing from the brokenness that they've experienced inside of relationships, which is very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
is it normally romantic, or is it child, parent, sister, boss?
9 times out of 10, it starts off as romantic, and that's the catalyst for them seeking spiritual help.
Mm.
But then by session number 2, they forgot that they even.
Wow.
They forgot about the person. And now we're talking about the parents. Now we're talking about childhood. Now we're talking about the patterns. So it's still truly all relational up until the point where they get past feeling like a victim of whoever it was. First it was the lover, and then it's like, oh, nope, wasn't them. Now it was my parents. Oh, wasn't them. Now, you know, until they get to, oh, it's actually just me. And then we can actually do the spiritual work.
Got it.
So it's breaking through those layers in the one-on-ones. I have a group coaching cohort as well, where it's mostly me teaching, but I'm teaching spiritual concepts. So teaching about the nature of the spirit, teaching about the chakras, teaching about like the wounded child, inner child, how to release, spiritual practices and rituals and things of that nature.
Got it. I was going to ask about the chakras or chakras. Which one is it? Does it matter? I guess
the southern in me says chakras.
Yeah, I like
but
chakra.
I think it's chakra.
Okay. And how many of them are?
So there are 7 that people talk about, but they're actually 12.
Oh.
But there are 7 main. We also refer to them as the energy center. So that's like a more people's logic brain. I'm like, for people that like to speak on things that way.
Okay.
Energy centers.
Yeah.
The 7 main ones that affect us in our day-to-day.
Mm. And so do you go through those with your clients?
With not with my one-on-one clients, because it's other work,
okay.
I guess you can say.
Mm-hmm.
With my one-on-one clients, if they get to the point where you can stop thinking you're a victim, and now we can actually learn some other stuff.
Got it.
Then I'm like, okay, well, now let's learn about energy. But most of the time it's we're going back to childhood. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching them visualizations to go back and heal the things. I'm teaching them other different techniques so we can go through and like moment by moment so they can release. But inside of my group class, we're going chakra by chakra. And I'm teaching how this pertains to your everyday life and how the energy of your energy centers is running your life as well, how you're losing power by allowing these things to exist in these spaces, or allowing your wounds to exist in these spaces.
Wow, yeah. What is the healing process look like? Because I just I had like a SI joint sprain that I was dealing with for about 30 days recently. And I'm about 2 weeks healed.
Okay.
But I started going to a chiropractor, a new chiropractor. It was close by my house because I was immobile, so I didn't want to go far. And then I was going to acupuncture. And it was a father-son, and they would just talk to me about the healing journey that often it's like you heal a little bit, then you might go back.
Mm-hmm.
And then you heal a little bit more, then you might go back. And you keep doing that until at one point you start to just get better.
Mm-hmm.
Is that typically what you see happen?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So you can imagine that it's... I'm trying to put it in a box.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to wrap it up a little more neatly in my mind so I can communicate it. So you can imagine that it's multi-tiered and multi-layered like that. Mm-hmm. It's almost like trying to cut through a multi-layered cake. So there's the thing that's wrong. I use big quotes around wrong.
Yeah.
There's the thing that's wrong, and then there's awareness. So this is the problem. I'm aware.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's what we would call doing the work.
Okay.
And that's in whatever method you choose, but it's that, it's okay, how do I feel better about XYZ? I'm going to use some affirmations. I'm going to talk to someone. it's when it comes into your mind now. So it's now like that mental knowing, mental knowing. And so after that, then it's a lot of people stop there, but after that, it's the integration period.
A lot of people stop at the mental knowing.
They stop at the mental knowing. And that's where you'll see a lot of people reading books about the thing, like, okay, well, this is what was wrong. Let me read books about how to heal my childhood trauma.
Yeah.
And so they read the books about the trauma, and now they're all of a sudden a trauma specialist, and they've healed their trauma. But in reality, now the integration is the actual healing part. It's the now I need to do the thing. I need to do the healing. So I've read about it. I know in my mind, but now I need to get it into my body. And so that's kind of where that cycle flows. It's like, okay, I'm going to do, oops, now I see that I had a situation where
I could have embodied the
I could have
healing.
Embodied and I did not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the regression, like that's where it looks like it regressed, where it looks like you went a step back, where it's like, oh no, now come back, awareness. Now I'm aware that I didn't embody the healing. Okay, let's go try this again.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. You said talked about, pole dancing.
Mm-hmm.
So you still do this, but you also mentioned something about my previous life. What was your, what was your previous life?
So many people are curious about that. I've never worked in a club.
Okay.
I've never worked in a club. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I know that's a question. So I'm like, let me just answer the question. But, so pole dancing is actually what started my healing journey.
Okay.
Which is very interesting. About 7 years ago, I had just got out of a relationship. Okay. Catalyst.
Yeah,
Catalyst,
yeah, yeah.
For the thing. And I just wanted to feel better about myself. I wanted to specifically, I Googled, how do you feel sexy? How do you, I Googled it. This is like, I'm so mental.
Yeah.
I'm so in the mind. I was like, okay, how do you be sexy? And it was like, twerk classes. I was like, oh. I was like, oh, that sounds fun. And it's interesting because the studio I started at is on this street.
Is it?
Yes.
On Marietta or Joseph?
It's on Jefferson. So kept down. It's right on this street. So I Googled, found twerk classes. It was at that studio. And before I even went to the studio, though, I was like, oh, twerking? Cool. YouTube. How to make it clap. I'm so serious. I was like, how do you make it clap? Went on YouTube. I couldn't find videos that satisfied me to make it clap well enough.
You need to check Instagram.
This was 7 years ago.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So people weren't,
they weren't fully
people
in
weren't
there.
Giving twerk tutorials on Instagram how they are now. So I found the studio, went, I took twerk classes. I twerked all I could twerk. I was like, okay, the cheeks is moving. The things are doing things. And they had poles there.
Oh, okay.
And honestly, I really enjoyed the environment. It was my first time being around women that were just doing something that they enjoyed. And before that, I didn't even know that women were nice. I thought that most women were, I had never been in an environment where women weren't catty. This was like a couple of years post-college. My college experiences were good, but it was very much so college girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know.
Yeah.
It all too
I'm
well.
Like, I don't even know what words to use for that, but you know what I mean? So I was like, these women are nice. I like it here. I'm like, I'm kind of done twerking, but what else can I do? And they were like, why don't you take a pole class? So took a pole class. I sucked at first. I cried in the car.
Did you?
I cried.
You felt like you had failed?
I didn't feel like I had failed, but I was looking around. I was like, why can't I just pull myself up? I'm like, why are they like, they were making it look so easy, and it's not easy. It's very difficult.
You made it look really easy when I saw your story.
It's very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But it was my first day. I mean, but this was me at that time. I'm like, girl, what did you expect? You just learning. Of course it's not going to be easy. But I just kept going back. I was like, no, I'm going to be good at this. So maybe about 6 months into it, I met a woman there, and she was like, hey, they've got these competitions. You want to compete? I was like, sure. Once I started competing, it was over with. It was just all of a sudden I was strong.
There's competitions?
There are competitions.
Pole competition.
It's like if you can imagine like a gymnastics competition, but it's all pole dance.
Wow. I mean, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Like the different things that women do on the pole.
So I did that. I competed. I started teaching. That was my full time. I quit my corporate job. I was doing that full time.
Wow. Was that empowering? Did that feel great? Like,
it did. It did. It did at the time.
Okay.
Fast forward to about a year. Fast forward to about a year ago. I ended up getting booked to dance on stage for Snoop Dogg. I did that. That was nice.
Shut up.
I spent a month-long residency teaching at Barbados. That was nice.
Wow.
And then after that, it was like, okay.
You were over it?
I was over it.
What do you think it was?
One, it was time for me to do this.
Okay.
I didn't know it was time for me to do this.
Got it.
Not to this extent, but it was time for me to do this. But I also didn't feel in touch with the community anymore. I just saw, the healing that was required within the community. I was really trying my best to step into my feminine journey. Even though I had been pole dancing, I realized that although I was pole dancing, I was doing femininity. I wasn't being feminine. I was doing femininity. And so all it was doing was cultivating even more masculine energy inside of me. And so when I saw that in myself, I was like, oh, this is what this is doing just in general. And so I didn't see where there was space for who I was becoming. Still teaching the way I was teaching full time. Like that was my job. So teaching the way I was teaching, I was just like,
Yeah.
We need to go do something else.
Wow. And you stepped away like that, or was it?
It was, honestly, it was pretty abrupt. I've been curating pole dance retreats for 3 years.
And that's over. I can't come to one?
No.
It's over.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're finishing. we're finishing off the last season between this year and the top of 2024.
Okay.
I was traveling to certify other people to instruct pole, which was my dream job and amazing company to work for. And I just all of a sudden told them, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. So I literally just dropped it all.
Was that hard? Because I feel like right now I'm at a place I've been surrendering and surrendering, but when I used to surrender, I was fake surrendering. Was like, I surrender, but it's like, but no, don't make me do anything like this.
Yeah.
So like, it sounds like you were just like, you left your dream. Well, I guess it was no longer your dream.
Because I did it.
You did it.
Yeah.
And you were like, I'm ready for the next thing.
I'll say it wasn't the first time I'd done it. I quit my corporate job in 2020. That I quit out of nowhere. No backup plan, no nothing. I was just like, I don't like it here. And I was like, my body was like, don't make us go back. And I was like, okay, cool.
And you listen to yourself, and you, because I feel like the quote that I see going around now is, I don't do anything that I don't want to do. I'm not mad at that, but how does that really work in real life?
You know, I'm back and forth about that quote.
Okay, you've seen it.
I've seen it, and I've said it. But even when I say it, I really think it depends on the it's so contextual.
Yeah.
Because it gives the idea that there are things that you won't want, like you don't need to do anything that you don't want to do. And in order to get forward in life, you have to do things that you don't want to do.
Right. Things that are uncomfortable.
You have to do things that are uncomfortable in order to evolve. Mm-hmm. You have to.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm back and forth about it, because I'm like, I think it's too much of a I don't want to do what I don't want to do culture.
Yeah.
Is you actually need to do some things that you don't want to do.
Right.
But
no, that makes sense.
Perhaps a better quote is, I don't do things that don't resonate with my spirit.
Mm-hmm. so much better.
Yeah.
Because then you can really define, it can still be challenging, but mm-hmm. it still aligns with what I'm doing.
Absolutely.
With my purpose.
There are so many things I don't, I don't want to pay my bills.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
Right.
We still have to do it.
Yeah, you still have to do that. When you said community earlier, it just, you said you met, it was the first time after college
mm-hmm.
meeting women that were nice.
Yeah.
So that makes me assume that were the women in your family not nice?
They were nice. I also don't know how I feel about the word nice, but
okay.
I said nice.
Yeah, or were they, didn't feel loving?
They are loving and they are kind, but I was just starting to learn what I needed in a female friend.
Okay.
And I've always had friends.
Okay.
But I didn't know, I've always been so introverted.
Uh-huh.
So I'm kind of like have you seen the quotes where they're like, oh, the extroverts go and adopt the introvert?
No.
Okay. So it's like quotes are going around where it's like, oh, like an extrovert always finds an introvert to adopt. And I've always had friends, but that's always been me.
Wow.
Like people just come and adopt me and they're like, you're mine now. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I hadn't ever really chosen my friend group.
Wow. Okay.
And honestly, it's just now, just now this year is where I'm understanding you need to choose.
Yeah.
Like you don't just be friends with the people who approach you for friendship, which is how it's happened. Now I'm like, choose. So I didn't know. I didn't know that I needed softer people who would listen to me just run my mouth
mm-hmm.
all day. I love my mom, but she was not the type of mom to just listen to you just run your mouth all day.
Okay. What was she like? Did she always had the answers really quick, or she was just like, oh, don't worry about that. Yeah.
We didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
It there was no talking about it.
Yeah.
But that's just how she is. She's more expressive now.
Okay.
And her and my daughter are so alike.
Oh.
So I understand her so much more from understanding my daughter. They are two peas in a pod. My daughter is going to talk when she wants to. Otherwise, she's going to keep it to herself. And you can't get her to talk about her feelings. My mom is the same way. Me, on the other hand, I want to talk about my feelings all day.
What's your sign?
I'm a Virgo.
You're a Virgo.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know your moon? I don't know.
Yes.
What is
it? I'm a Gemini moon. I'm a Cancer rising. So that's why the Gemini moon makes me just like ning, 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 ning. My mom is a Scorpio. Scorpios are so to themselves.
Yeah.
What's your sign?
I'm a Libra.
I see.
You see the Libra?
Yeah. That's why you're so beautiful to me.
Really?
Libra women are so beautiful.
Really? Oh, thank you.
But it's like you all radiate beauty, even if it's not. I mean, you have a beautiful face, but you all radiate this light, beautiful energy.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. Because the Libras get read for filth. Like, we're liars, we're promiscuous, like, and I'm like, let me find out what my moon is so I can figure out, because I'm not those things. Like, I listened to some readers, I guess, mm-hmm. and one in specific, I won't say who it is, but I felt like she was always coming for Libras. And I was like, okay, I really want to know what the other, you know, parts of my chart are, but
yeah.
We were talking about another episode that I don't know the time that I was born. So I really don't know what are all the things that make me who I am, but I guess, what is the sun? The sun is like your emotions, or what is the sun sign?
The sun is more so your ego. It's like your, it's your, the essence of your spirit. Is your sun sign. The moon sign will be more your emotions.
Okay.
And then your rising sign is the personality that you project outward. So the sun is how you feel. The moon is how you are when you're most comfortable. And the rising is the first impression that you make on people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But yeah, Libra is beauty. Libra is real.
I know we like beautiful things.
Yes, it's ruled by Venus, and Venus is the planet of love and beauty. So, it's totally
it's fitting.
That.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, though. Like, you're talking about a community, a sisterhood, because I, like you said, I am just now at a place where I am like, I've kind of just surrendered. Like, yes, I need sisterhood. Mm-hmm. I absolutely need sisterhood. I have a sister. She's like 18 months older than me. We were so different growing up. I almost just thought, I was just like, ugh, my sister's so lame. Like, she was super book smart. I was very much so couldn't care. I didn't care anything about books. I was like creative. Yeah. And we went totally two different ways. And she had different friends. And I used to be such a snob to her friends. Unless they did her wrong, then I was ready to fight them. But I did growing up. Now me and my sister are tight. Like, it's like this bond. We love each other so much. But growing up, we did not have that closeness. And then I think I dealt with just having friends that weren't really my friends. Mm-hmm. And then I think me starting in the music industry at 17, then it was super competitive with like females that I worked with or around. And so and then I used to say, like, oh, I have more guy friends than female friends, because female friends are always trying to compete with you. And the guys aren't trying to compete with you. Yeah. You know, like, I don't have to worry about it being a competition. And then I heard people say things like, I hate women that don't know who say they don't have any female friends. Like, you're the problem. And I'm like, dang, I'm not the problem. Women, I think it's just important, and I've seen more of it lately, people coming out and saying that there's some toxicity in this, in these women, in these women-on-women relationships. Yeah. And I'm not blaming the women, or I'm not blaming us, but let's talk about it.
Right.
Let's talk about, like, the fakeness mm-hmm. or the ingenuousness of, you know, the female relationships.
Yeah. It's, I'll say that's one of the, when I was talking about those things I noticed when it was time for me to leave the pole community, competitiveness is, if we look at it on like an energetic scale, it's a masculine trait, not like a man's trait.
Okay.
But competitive energy is masculine energy. Mm. And so one of the things that I've noticed just within our community of women is a lot of women don't know how to be feminine with other women in those spaces where you don't have to compete. It doesn't matter who is the most this, the best that. It's, you don't know how to just sit and collaborate and be okay with whatever someone has to offer without comparing ourselves. And that's where, like, those, and again, I'm calling it masculine, not for men, but just because of the nature of the energy, where that comparison comes in. We don't know how to just sit around a table and be like, sis, I love exactly what you have going on. I'm so okay that is not me. I'm okay with that, but I love this about you. Mm. It's something in the mind, and I'm pretty sure it's society. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it's the way society is
has shaped everything. Yeah,
which society, yes, but we're still accountable. We're still accountable for the thoughts that come in our mind to where we start to compare ourselves to another woman, but we're lacking of that. I'll say I have two relationships that are like that, just two, where there's no comparison, mm-hmm. and I look at them and be like, man, I could never be like you, and I'm so okay with that. I love that about you, but it's not there.
Wow.
Or we don't see it.
We don't see it.
Often.
We don't see it, and it's not talked about. I just, while you were talking, I just kind of had like a little breakthrough, I kind of realized where I have a quality that I'm working to just kind of dismantle, and that is giving other women compliments. Just random women. Like, I know how to give my friends compliments. I love them. Like, oh, you're amazing. But you know how you were able to compliment me? I could think it all day long. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I started thinking about it recently in the last couple of years. Like, why do I not just say it? You know, when I see a woman, I don't say it, and something's holding me back. And what I feel like I just broke through right now is growing up, the friends that I had and some of my cousins, when I was being completely myself, it always got turned back on me. Mm. Oh, like, you're always smiling, or you're always happy, or you think you're all that. And I think it feels like now that that's why I stopped expressing just what was on my mind, because I'm afraid for if I say you're pretty and you'll be like, okay, girl, thanks. Like, it's not received and like, thank you. It's more just like, why are you? Okay, thanks. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But that says so much more about the person who was meant to receive, because another thing that we see often is a lot of women cannot receive compliments.
Mm.
It's very difficult. It was difficult for me to receive compliments for a while, but that was because I had issues with giving them. The more I gave them, and now it's, again, it's second nature. I was just like...
That's what I want to be, though. No, because I love saying it. I think about it all the time, and something keeps me from saying it. It's like, dang, I'm more shy around women than I am. Well, I don't really deal with a lot of men, but I think growing up, I just felt more relaxed around the guys than women. And I'm like, I don't want that no more.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like it.
Yeah. It's it makes me think about, not to say that this is your case, but it just makes me think about two things I've seen in regards to that. One, it's a thought process of if I say something to you that makes you feel bigger, I'm smaller.
Mm.
So let me not do that in order to keep this image that I have of myself. I need to keep you at a certain level. And it's not a conscious thought.
Yeah.
I don't believe it's a conscious thought for people, but it's a fear that resides in there. But that's that competitiveness. But then it's also honestly this deeply ingrained fear of being loving.
Mm.
Because why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Why would you be? Why wouldn't you say something to someone that would make them feel good if you weren't afraid to love?
Yeah. Ooh. Ooh. Yeah. I there's so many layers to this, because the whole, when you say that, it reminds me of the self-worth thing. And, you know, admitting that your self-worth is not where you thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's an ego thing. It's hard to say like, oh yeah, I know I'm worthy. But there might be some superficial things that, you know, that you're looking at that say, you know, your worth. But like, no, you're choosing to do this. You did this. You accepted this. That comes from you maybe not thinking you deserve better.
Right.
And I finally had to be like, okay, your self-worth isn't all the way there, sis.
Yeah.
So I could start rebuilding.
Yeah.
Rebuilding that.
That's almost everybody. I don't think that people realize that it's almost everybody. I don't know too many people who aren't hearing some voice in their mind, myself included, mm-hmm. that aren't hearing some voice in their mind that tells them to be smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they accept things, do things that most people have a voice in their mind that says you don't deserve to. And it's so quiet. It's legitimately a whisper. Yeah. But it's consistent. It plays like a reel, but it's often the thought behind the thought, behind the thought, behind the thought. It's like, you think this is the issue, but no, there's actually a voice that's saying you don't deserve. Mm-hmm. And therefore, here are your actions. Here's what you accept.
I really wanted to talk to you about two emotions mm-hmm. that have come up for me so much in my life, and I saw you had touched on it in one of your lives, and the first one is guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Guilt has plagued me so much. I feel like I've always find a way to be guilty mm-hmm. for something. If someone's sad, if someone's hurting, and I realized that some of my guilt started with my dad and the divorce of my parents mm-hmm. at 8. And it's almost like I wanted to make sure he was okay, because it looked like mommy was thriving and it looked like daddy was kind of shrinking.
Yeah.
And then learning that his history with his relationship with his mom and his dad, I just cried for him internally, like mm-hmm. all the time, and just find myself just kind of catering to his emotions. And whenever I couldn't be there, he was never asking me to be there, mm-hmm. but I obligated myself to be there. And so that guilt of making sure other people were okay, specifically men that I date.
Yeah.
Putting their emotions and making sure they're okay. It's almost like I was looking at like the little boy that my dad was who mm-hmm. didn't get his needs met, and I was going to be the savior for anyone else. And I'm done with the guilt. I'm letting it go. What do you say about that and guilt? What is that all about? And why does so many people just resonate with it and accept it?
So I'll just speaking a touch to your situation.
Okay.
Everything that we do is about us. Mm. Every single thing.
Okay.
So in regards to that little girl, what I hear is she wanted to be seen and felt in a certain way. Mm. And so she inserted herself. And she wanted that attention. And yes to loving on the Father, but again, everything that we do is about us. Mm. So my immediate question is, what wasn't she receiving to where she felt like, now I need to take care of him so I can receive mm-hmm. what exactly, mm-hmm. you know, especially if it started to take itself into your adult mm-hmm. relationships. So I'll stop there with that. Mm-hmm. But that was just a question that came up in my mind. But in regards to guilt is, it's essentially, it's a feeling of separation. Mm-hmm. It's a feeling of separation from the divine. It's this thought in our mind that says if we look at our spirit as if it has stages of maturity, I'll go there. So guilt, when a person, I'm like, come on, words, compartmentalize yourself. It's like five thoughts coming in my mind at the same time.
I'm the same way.
I'm like, come on. When someone holds on to guilt, we can look at them as if they are spiritually a child. Mm. And so that spiritual child is looking at their Father God, Father Creator, as if I've done something bad, so my parent is going to punish me. That's internally, that's the unconscious dialogue. But there is no spiritual parent to punish you. And so since you can't directly feel the punishment that you're looking for because you think that you've done something bad, you do it to yourself. Hmm. That's where the emotion of guilt comes from.
Oh, wow.
You think you should be punished for whatever it is that you did.
And you're not. So you're just going
to. So you're going to do it to yourself. And so in turn, you're going to feel guilty. Guilt, the feeling of guilt itself is punishment enough because of what it does to your body. When I've done energetic work with people, guilt feels like hot pins and needles coming through the skin on any person. It feels like they're literally burning themselves up from the inside. And that's what it's doing. It's one of the most detrimental things that you can do to yourself. It legitimately can cause cancer if you've got other things going on with you because of how dense the emotion is. But essentially, that's what it is. It's punishing yourself for something that you feel as if you've done wrong. Mm. And so the healing of that is, one, forgiving yourself for whatever it is that you think you've done. Mm-hmm. And understanding that you've done nothing wrong. But that's where the work is. It's getting to a place where people can find, and typically it's always the child, where people can go back to that child self and sit with the child and be like, hey, you didn't do anything wrong. Like, it's okay. You don't have to. Nobody's.
Yeah.
You're allowed to make mistakes.
Yeah.
You're allowed to trial and error. This is life. It's okay. Mm. And so now can you be okay with the fact that this did not happen in a way that you would think was ideal? Can you be okay with yourself?
Oh, I received that. The second one is shame, and mm-hmm. it feels like maybe they're connected.
Very connected.
Okay.
Yep, and it's still that I feel as if I've done something wrong, and so I don't want to look. I feel as if I've done something wrong, and so I don't want my divine parent to look at me, because shame very much feels like it's like a hiding type of emotion. Like, don't look. I'm trying to cover. I'm trying to hide. I'm trying to conceal whatever it is that's happening. And so now within the person, it shows up as I'm hiding something from myself. I feel like I've done something wrong, and no one else is going to punish me. No one else is going to tell me I've done something wrong, but I'll do it to myself.
What are some of the behaviors that, that look like shame? Is there anything that comes to mind?
What comes up immediately is I listen to the way people talk about other people. Honestly, when it comes to guilt and shame, the things that they choose to expose about others, it shows me what's going on with them.
Got it.
It's the way that they perceive what someone else has quote unquote done wrong per their own judgment. And then I'm like, you actually feel that way about yourself. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I love that. Thank you for touching on those two things. Cause, that might be a part of my intention on Saturday. We're going to figure it out.
Let's do the work.
Before we close, I have, this deck of cards, Reflect and Affirm, cards to nurture yourself and awaken your inner light. And I just wanted to add this to each episode. It's by Rochelle Sané. And I want you to pick a card and then we'll both answer.
I love cards.
You do?
Yes.
Do you use them a lot?
I do.
Okay.
Now that is something I do every day.
Nice. Now these are huge. We try to mix them up, but...
Say so, whatever I'm supposed to have, I'll have.
Yes. Okay. So I'll let you. You can pick anywhere in the deck. I'll give you this.
What is something that you are passionate about?
You know, I am extremely passionate about creating.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be doing that till I'm like 105. I have such a big imagination, and when I think of something, I immediately want to see it.
Yes.
And then I want to see if someone else likes it, and then I want to solve a problem with it. I'm passionate about creating stuff all day long. That's like that just makes me so happy. It makes me feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
Makes me feel like, okay, I'm good at this. It makes you feel really fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. I love that for you.
Thank you.
Creating is so fun.
It is.
What else would you be doing with your time?
I don't know. Like, is that a real question or is that like a rhetorical?
I mean, I would love for you to answer.
What else would I be doing with my time if I was not creating? You know, I can't think of anything that I would be doing. Maybe I would be, everything just comes back to creating. I feel like the only things that I do that are not creative are like nature walks,
yeah,
yoga. Like I probably would be just figuring out new ways to, like, maybe just connecting. Learning and connecting. Mm-hmm. That probably would be the other thing that I could find some joy in and some, like, peace and fulfillment.
I love that.
Thank you.
Okay. What is something that I'm passionate about? Honestly, it's the same.
Is it?
Yeah. I was sitting this morning thinking about how I just want to make stuff.
Yeah.
And same. I just want to create stuff. And then be like, hey, you like this? Do this. but my thing is, I'm the creator, but I'm not the one to keep it going. I'm like, okay, it's out there.
Yeah.
Somebody else.
I'm a little bit like that too. The follow through. That's the, I mean, I can follow through, but like, I've never been good at the,
I don't have staying power.
Yeah. It takes a lot. it takes a lot for me to, I guess, stay interested. Like, mm-hmm. okay, it's almost just like, I'm going to make this. If you don't see the value in this, I'm not the one that's going to try to sell it to you.
Same.
So that's the part where it's like, I'll make this. I'll sit it here. Mm-hmm. If y'all gravitate towards it, then I'll stay with it because then I'm excited. There's energy coming towards it. But if I have to figure out how to get you to understand and appreciate it, then I'm on to creating something else.
Same. Okay, I'll give one more, just a little different. Okay. I'm also passionate about just helping people shift their consciousness and shift their perspectives around life. That. Life is so amazing if you just let it be. Mm. There are so many beautiful things about life, even if it doesn't seem ideal. And ideal is normally someone else's idea. Like you saw somebody you like said someone else is doing and you're like, oh, I want to do that, but it may be not even for you. So you can create the ideal life to where you just are happy with what you're doing. So I'm passionate about helping people get to that space where it's like, you know what, I actually enjoy living.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Does that take you back to like the childlike mind where the simplest things they find so much joy and fulfillment in?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Something that I noticed for me, and I think this is with most people, when you get to a space where you start to truly be happy, you start to do the things you liked to do when you were a child. Mm. Everything that I'm doing now, like the things I'm like, ooh, those are things I did when I was a kid. Yeah. Now I'm just adulting them.
Yeah. So, I love that. That's beautiful. You forever. Thank you so much. Before we get out of here, I want you to tell, you can look at that camera, tell everybody where they can find you, Instagram, website, all that good stuff.
So you can find me on Instagram at Purposefully Zenny. TikTok is the same. My website is zenoasis.net. And I have 4 spaces left for an all-women's retreat in Costa Rica. You can find that on my website as well. That is April 24th through the 29th, 2024. Yes. It's called the Wild Woman Experience. It's 5 days, 5 nights. We are doing a dolphin tour. We're in the jungle. We're doing sacred rituals and all of that good stuff. So, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you guys for joining us again. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.